Radio.
Marriage and Celibacy, a presentation by Father Thomas Lawyer during the Theology of the Body retreat held at the Mount Schoenstatt Retreat Center in Mongawa.
The next topic we were going to touch on was this relationship then of marriage and celibacy and how the two are interdependent. Again, in our culture, we have to debunk some things. We talk here about integration, right? How things work together. We don't live in the either or. We don't live bipolar like our culture does. We live in the both and. I'll just start on this and we'll finish it up tonight and we'll go into other things tonight. But when in the theology of the body, when John Paul II approaches the theme of marriage itself, you know, he's been leaning up to it with all this theology of body and stuff like this, as we have been doing. Notice we kind of laid a foundation the first night. Maybe you're wondering what in the heck we were talking about, why I was talking about sacramental worldview and that stuff. Well, hopefully you can see as we layer layer these subjects, that you need that foundation to all the way to understand the slightest little detail that we'll talk about at the end on Sunday. And he talks about celibacy, or what he calls continence for the kingdom, before he talks about marriage. It's a preparation for marriage. Now, why would he do that? Well, remember I said earlier that everybody has to be married? It's just a matter of how. A celibate vocation and being married sacramentally are two sides of the same coin. They're not diametrically opposed. They're both two ways of being espoused, of being married. What does it mean to be espoused, to be married? What is espousal love? It means something to which I give my whole self. I die to myself and I live now for that. That's what marriage is. That's what spousal love is. It's the love God had for us. It's the love we're to have for one another. The greatest affirmation of a religious person who embraces celibacy is if you were to look at them, like Father here, and say, you know, he would have been a great husband and father. That is the greatest affirmation, everything else aside, of his celibacy. That he's living his celibacy spousally. If he doesn't live it spousally, if he's not living in such a way where his people sense that he is their father and their husband, then yeah, celibacy makes no sense. The world sees this as excess baggage. Not one of those archaic rules that the church should already move beyond. Conversely, a married couple, should be able to say about a married couple, golly, she would have been a great nun. He would have been a great priest. That would be the greatest affirmation on their sacramental marriage. Why is that? Because as a priest, we are still sexual beings. What did I say sexuality is about? Why do we have parts, male and female? What do they say? I mean, that's the key. What do they say? What does sexuality say? Yes, it says give myself completely, fully, freely, faithfully, fruitfully. I call those the real F words. Fully, freely, faithfully. A total gift of self, which by its nature becomes life-giving. So the priest, the religious, does that. In other words, they're espoused mystically. mystically married. What do they call the head of a religious order, a female religious order? Nuns. Mother Superior. And what do they oftentimes wear? Wedding rings. You know that? A lot of nuns wear wedding rings. When I was ordained a priest, celibate priest, in our ordination ceremony, one of the most essential moments of the ordination that's turning me into a celibate priest is the exact same ceremony we use in our marriage ceremony. Now, for a married couple, their marriage, their living sacramental marriage, reminds the celibates that our celibacy makes sense when we live it spousally. In other words, when we're living it truly, mystically, as father and husband to our bride, which is the church. And this is not just pious talk. It's a reality. You should see our honey-do list. You know what that is, right? Honey-do this, honey-do that, honey-do this. We say that in American English. Honey-do list. Conversely, our celibacy reminds the married couple of the sacramental, eschatological dimension of their marriage. That, this is why you would say to them, oh, would have been a great nun, would have been a great priest. It means that what we're seeing in them, you know they're married, God is first. God is first. And that allows them to be closer to each other. See, it works like this. I'll put another triangle up here for you. Can you see that triangle? Okay, here's God. Here's the husband. Here's the wife. Okay? Husband is going to pursue his relationship with God. He wants to draw closer to God. He's going to do all the right things. He's going to go to Eucharistic adoration. He's going to go to confession. He's going to pray. He's going to go to retreats on the theology of the body. So he's going to try to move towards God. But so is his wife. So they're moving towards God. It might be at different rates, but they're moving towards God. God is first. Well, what happens as they move in that direction? They get closer to each other. So the degree to which they're good monks, that's right, monks, is a degree to which they become good spouses. What is a monk? What is monasticism? It's a radical choice, a radical way to live out the same baptismal promise that we all take as baptized Christians. And what is the essence of that? The dying to self, rising to the other. This is an essential ingredient of a happy sacramental marriage. The ascetical discipline, it means the discipline to say no to yourself. That's what fasting is all about. What color do we wear at baptism? What color do we wear at weddings? What's that? Well, the bride wears white, yeah. Exactly. He wears black because he's dying to himself. What do I wear? Black. So I'm dying to myself. The Catholic Catechism calls baptism the nuptial bath that precedes the spousal union of the Eucharist. The nuptial bath. It puts together marriage and baptism. Monasticism, celibacy, and marriage are two sides of the same coin, two ways of self-donation. I come from a long line of married priests, as I mentioned, and a lot of people don't know this about where you have a tradition of married priests, but married priests are required to abstain from relations with their wives the night before they celebrate the Eucharist. So much for daily mass, huh? No. And also during fasting periods. And if a married priest loses his wife, he cannot remarry. Now, why would all that be? Because in the priesthood, and even in marriage, in the wisdom of the church, there is always preserved the eschatological destiny of our lives. That ultimately it is God that is our spouse. Ultimately it is God to whom we belong. And if we put that first, what we do on earth, marriage or religious life, will become rich and fruitful and happy. And so the church preserves the eschatological dimension everywhere. It's certainly in the priesthood by its nature. The priesthood points to that which is beyond, right? And so there are things that the priest has to live that affirm that in his priesthood. That he lives ultimately and points ultimately to the bridegroom Christ. And that's why there are guidelines for abstaining and also not being remarried if you were to lose your wife. Even St. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, in John Paul II's theology body, he talks about this. What does he say about people who are married, who are not married, or people who lose their wives, their spouses? What's that? He says to stay as you are. Don't, you know, not as a fast, hard rule. He just said, I encourage you to just stay as you are. You were married once, not married now. Stay as you are. Why would he say that? He gives the reason. Why would he say that? He says because he says it with the understanding of the expectation of the parousia, of the coming of Christ, and of keeping our focus on what is our ultimate destiny. He says, yeah, if you have to remarry, but it would be better if you didn't. Because, okay, you were married or you're not married, whatever. Okay, make your focus for the short time you're on this earth, ultimately Christ. If you have to marry, okay. But my preference would be that you keep your focus on Christ. That's that eschatological reality which is woven in marriage, celibacy, or even where you have a married priesthood. And for those who are celibate, John Paul II calls this being continent for the kingdom. It's a way of making present on earth what will be in the eschaton. And it's an affirmation of the goodness of marriage. Because it's seen as a sacrifice, right? I mean, going back to my little, when I questioned the young people, why would you want to be priests or nuns, right? It horrifies them that they would have to live without this. So a person who does, who embraces the celibate call, that person is affirming the goodness, the holiness, the specialness of sacramental marriage. Just by the fact of their witness. There would be no witness if marriage wasn't so great. But precisely because it is, to embrace the life of celibacy is an affirmation of the greatness, the goodness of the sacrament of marriage. In the Eastern churches, what they do is they advise that if you're not a married priest, they recommend that you be connected to a monastery. In fact, it was the church that has a married priesthood, the Eastern churches, that gave the world monasticism. Monasticism, which celibacy is part and parcel of it, was developed in the Eastern churches, starting in the deserts of Egypt, then spread throughout the Eastern churches, and eventually was taken to the West and developed into other kinds of community life. But the church knew that these two things, celibacy and marriage, are interdependent. You cannot separate them out. They're not diametrically opposed. One is not defined in terms of what you can have over here as a married couple and what you can have here over as a celibate. They're both defined in terms of the choice to love, the choice to make a gift of self, the choice to be a spouse. And with any choice, there's naturally going to be a negative, right? If I choose this, it means I haven't chosen that. Okay, there's going to be an element of negative. But the choice in and of itself is a positive. It's a choice to love, to make that gift of self. And the two are interdependent. Celibacy subsists, the monastic disciplines subsist in marriage, or so they should. And the spousal nature of celibacy should subsist and exist in the religious vocation. Not either or, but one of our words, integrated. Integrated. They work together. They're indispensable and inseparable. Two sides of the same coin. Okay, it's time for a break.
That was Father Thomas Loya with Marriage and Celibacy. This presentation was part of the Theology of the Body retreat held at the Mount Schoenstatt Retreat Center in Mogoa, and which was organized by the Family and Life Office from the Diocese of Parramatta. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit creadio.org.au.